Recording. Okay, so tonight we are continuing our discussion, or not our discussion, but our series of Rav Moshe Sperlbach's Shuvos. And I picked one tonight, which also is in volume 7, it's toward the end. And the question, let me just get the noise, the question here is if I want to sell a kidney, an organ from my body to somebody, is it ethical for a Jewish person to sell something, a part of their body, to somebody else who needs it for profit? That is the question that he's going to deal with. And there's going to be different aspects to this question. There's going to be a question of A, is it ethical? B, do I have something called bilis? Do I have ownership over my own body? And this is going to be a very, it's not, we're not talking about abortion in this discussion, but at the beginning, the second paragraph, we're already going to see something which can actually relate a lot to the questions facing us in American politics today. So, as we might be familiar, a lot of the, we'll call it the rhetoric surrounding questions such as abortion and human rights is that people say, my body, my choice. I have bilis, I have ownership over my own body. The government can't tell me what to do with my body. Religion can't tell me to do with my body. So there is this very strong feeling in an individualistic society that at very least, I own my own body. I get to decide what I do with it. And, those arguments have been used to for abortion purposes. They've been used to legalize prostitution and to have that recognized as a regular profession. So that's a lot of the philosophy that goes on in Western civilized. You could argue if you put the quotation marks there or not, America today.
And
But
included in that is, what if you want to sell it, but you don't want to use the money for yourself, but you want to give it to somebody who needs it more than you, or give it to a tzedakah?
okay, so it's always, I would say it's always commendable to give money to tzedakah. But the question is, right, if I, let me just give an extreme example. If I were to rob a bank and I give the money to tzedakah,
No.
no rabbi is going to say, yeah, it's mutter to rob the bank so you could donate it to a good shalom afterwards.
Well, then you're
I can't give
making
you a
it
heter
sound,
for that. But so the, right,
you're
Philip?
making it sound like either it's permissible or it's not permissible.
So there's really, let me frame it as such. We're going to see there's really two, I would say, two levels to this question. There's dine mammas, there's a pure monetary question of ownership over my body. But then there's a question also of iser v'heter, of even if I am the owner of my own body, we could say that halachically, is it ethical for me to be donating? So we could be talking about kidney donations. So is it ethical for me to sell my kidney instead of donating it? And then B, what we're going to start off with actually, it should be A really, we're going to talk about artificial insemination. Now, just a little background about artificial insemination that really is deserving of its own class. There was a huge dispute between Rav Moshe Feinstein and Rav Breisch about the Chelkis Yaakov, about whether artificial insemination poses a problem. Now, does anyone know what the potential issue with artificial insemination could be? There's a few, but what's the main possible potential halachic issue with artificial insemination? Can
Who's
anyone
the
guess?
mother? Who's the
Really?
mother? Who's the mother?
Okay, who is the, well, I would say actually the opposite.
Who's the
Usually it's
father?
the father. The father is, you go to a sperm bank, we don't know who the father is. I mean,
Right.
maybe you could track it down,
Well,
maybe they have records. But what's
anyways.
a potential halachic issue? Anyone else want to give a shot at it? Out there.
Well,
What?
who's a Cohen and Levi, or?
Cohen Levi. Okay, so right, keeping track of kahuna. That's a great question as well. Great point. So you had to be
Also marriage
Levirish.
when the child gets older.
Ah, that's true. Moshe Feinstein does talk about that. So he says that, in America, it's actually easier. Because in America, we assume that most sperm would be, you go to a standard sperm bank, it's probably coming from a guy. So you don't run into issues of potential incest later on. But if you, in the chat, I see Howard wrote Momzer in capital letters. And boy, is he right. Momser is the main issue, which is this sperm is coming from another man who's, you know, we're talking about a case where the husband is just incapable of providing viable sperm. So they, as recourse, they get from a third party, from another man. So wait a minute, if she's going to have a child with sperm from another man who's not her husband, won't the child be a momser, a bastard? Won't that be out of wedlock? So it really gets down to the question of, on the one hand, yes, the sperm is not coming from her husband, but there was no what we call a maisabia. She didn't have intercourse with a man who was not her husband, so therefore there was no act of adultery. And since there was no act of adultery, there's no momser that's produced from there, because it has to be an act of adultery. That's just a little background. Zadie, yes.
Yeah. I want to expand both topics a bit.
Sure.
Giving up, for example, a kidney to save the life of a close relative. Also, in terms of artificial insemination, if the sperm comes from the husband for some reason or other, that's the only way that the wife can conceive. She can't do it through natural process. The halakhic ramification of that, if any.
So if the husband has viable sperm, they just can't do it through the normal means, so they have to extract it artificially, then there's much less problems. The only issue in theory that Ramosha discusses is how to get the sperm from the man, because masturbation is also halakhically problematic. So the question is how they get it from the man in the halakhically right way. It's I forgot exactly what the bottom line psak was. It's been a while. Rabbi, maybe we'll address that when we do it as a shir. Lloyd.
Well, yeah, how will they get it from the sperm bank if you use somebody?
Getting male sperm, it can be done surgically. So masturbation isn't the only technique available in this day and age. I'd like to raise the issue of surrogacy, where basically artificial insemination, generally the fertilization takes place in a petri dish, which is external from each spouse. So and then re-injected into the mother who carries the fertilization process to term. But then again, isn't there an issue of who's the mother?
So that's what I said.
Okay, all good questions. So I just want to
reinsert it into any other woman who can carry it to term.
Okay, excellent. So great points, Lloyd. Right, the surrogacy question is, you know, that's like a branch off topic. So we're branching off from a branch off topic. I just want to contextualize. I bring in this whole artificial insemination thing by way of introduction. But God willing, if this is of interest, we can certainly dedicate a class to the topic and learn it properly down the line. Anyway, that's all just introduction, so we know what we're dealing with over here. So those who are following in the tshuva, we're starting with the first paragraph. Kibalti she'ilosa olus mashaba v'noseinu harabe. Now, whoever has been with us for this group a long time, what does that mean when we see the words b'avonoseinu harabe in a tshuva? In the multitude of our sins. Anyone remember? It means it's going to be interesting. That's always the key. If the rabbi starts with saying, in the multitude of our sins, we've done X, Y, and Z,
it's going to be fun. Charav Beit HaMikdash.
What?
I said Charav Beit HaMikdash.
Right, they'll throw in all sorts of, you know, things like that. So the key words by Vasino Rabin. That if a woman, let's say the woman actually, her egg is not viable, so then she will get an egg, and this comes a little bit to the surrogacy question that Lloyd started alluding to, and she'll have it inseminated by her husband. And then it's put into her womb. Now, the whole surrogacy, who's the child considered? Is it her child? Is it the other mother's child? Great question, another topic. But now, here's the question that interests us for this evening. Af al pi din Torah, ha'isha zar shetoremes habetis hi bailim al zeh. The question is, does this woman who is donating, the third party woman who's donating her egg, is she considered an owner over her egg? Ubekocha lemochra liktos tashlum Allah. Is this considered, I mean, the same way I can sell you my computer, I can sell you my shtender, I can sell you my office desk. I'm just looking around here trying to see what kind of objects I could conjure. Nothing that creative. Can I sell you my egg as well? Can I sell you cells that are in my body? Can I sell you blood from my body? Now, that's the way the black market tends to work. But assuming there's no dina de mahusi dina issues of working through black market, assuming that it's lawful, am I allowed to sell something from myself? Meaning, am I considered the owner over my body to the extent that I can sell something? Now, why would I think I'm not the owner over my body halachically? Well, there's a lot of halachic reasons why. I'll give you one example. When it comes to the laws of Chavalah, so one is not allowed to harm themselves. So there's a whole question, right? How could I go paintballing? I'm going to harm somebody by doing chavala. I'm shooting them. And many times people don't go with enough requisite padding. So I bruise that person. I'm not allowed to bruise another person. And I'm not supposed to put myself in a position where I'm going to get hurt and blood might even come out because of it. How am I allowed to go skiing? I might hurt myself. So all sorts of questions like that. And the thing is, assuming you could circumvent it, fine. But what lies at the heart of the issue is that I am not allowed. I mean, it's machlokis, but presumably I am not allowed to just willy-nilly harm myself. Why? What do you mean? My body, my choice. I can choose what I want to do with my body. The answer is no. The answer is that HaKadosh Baruch Hu, God gave us our bodies to utilize, but we are not ultimately the owners of our bodies. Our bodies belong to God, as does everything else. And so they must be used in accordance with God's laws. So perhaps it's possible that I do not own my body. God owns my body, and I just, I'm borrowing it long-term from him. That might be a way to view it. So the question is, do I even have ownership over the cells in my body that I could sell him? That's the question he asked. So before he addresses the technical halakhic question, he feels that it behooves us to put our foot down and to recognize that this whole idea of surrogacy and taking a cell, an egg cell from another mother, he believes it's something that will infringe and destroy the remnant of kedusha, of sanctity of the Jewish people that we have. The iser chamer b'yoser la'asoso, and it's a terrible thing to do. But let's say you did it anyway, right? So again, this is his opinion that's aser to do it. It doesn't mean that other rabbis don't think it's aser, but that's what he assumes. He thinks it's prohibited. But let's say. Excuse me. Let's say a woman goes ahead and she decides to buy the egg from another woman and have it surgically implanted in her womb. Nireshal pi din Torah chayav l'shalim la. She would probably have to pay her back for it. Why? So for those who are following inside, these are the key words, really important words here. Sha'isha hi bailim al kol davar hagadol begufa. A woman is considered the halachic owner over everything that grows from her body. Anything that she produces from her body, she is the halachic owner of it. Therefore, if she produces an egg in her uterus, it can be taken out from her body and given to another woman. She can charge her however much she wishes to do so. Because why? It's her body, and she has ownership over it. The same way I sell you my computer, I sell you my shtender, I sell you my lamp over here, or my bookshelf, I could sell you also cells for my body as well. However, see, this sounds like a very liberal statement.
This is Rav Sternbach saying that?
Yes, or Moshe Sternbach saying it. So for a moment here we have one of the luminaries.
Boy, you can go into business on all kinds of things.
What was that, Susan?
You can go into business on all kinds of things.
Yeah, well, what do you mean by that?
You'd sell a lot of books.
Yeah, and not only that. I mean, I guess it would apply to a fetus, and she would have control. I mean, reabortion.
So the fetus really comes back to our other discussion that we had, like half a year ago, I think, when we did abortion, whenever that was. So abortion, we had that whole machlokus. If the fetus is considered alive already, if it's a baby, or if it only gets its soul, if it's only considered living at least once it's born. But right, what would be the implications for the fetus based on this? Interesting point. I like the direction you're thinking in. Now, this sounds, if I were to stop the tube over here and we close up for the night, this would sound like a very liberal statement that, basically when everyone goes to the Women's March and they're all protesting, what are they protesting for? For women to have autonomy over their bodies and for other things as well. But that's one of the main values that they are propounding. So it sounds like Rosh Sherbach just basically supported that. However, the next few lines completely takes it in a different direction. He said,
where could I find the source? I'm sorry, I missed it. Where is it?
It's in the chat, the tshuva.
No, thank you.
Okay. V'chol zeh bebeitis shel isha penuya. However, everything I said until this point only applies to a woman who is not married. Since when it comes to a married woman, she's married to her husband, and he has obligations to her. She has obligations to him. Those who joined those Fridays when we did Mishnayos from Ksubos, you know what I'm talking about. Azai bichlal shibur ha'ishus sheshuso shel bayelin nami menu limsor ha'beitio shela le'isha zara. Maybe her husband has a say in the matter. And if her husband doesn't like the idea of her giving her eggs out to other women to produce children for other men, maybe he has a say in the matter to withhold it. Shemishuberes lo shotolit elaming menu bilvad. This is also, I underlined it, double underlined in the tshuva. Because she is meshubad. She is obligated to him that only he could produce children through her to the exclusion of other men. Now, usually that means that's why there's a prohibition of adultery. But what Rav Moshe Sternbach is saying is don't think that you could circumvent that and that you could sell your eggs to somebody else and then your eggs are going to produce somebody else's children. While maybe you're not violating technically the prohibition of adultery, it comes relatively close in terms of the spirit of the law. The spirit of the law is that this man and woman are married to each other and she should only bear his children. She shouldn't be producing other people's children. Therefore, she would not be permitted to sell that egg. So it's very interesting because when we're talking about a single or unmarried woman, it sounds very liberal. It's her body. She can do with it whatever she wants. She can sell her eggs, make profit off of it, whatever she wants. But once she's married, her husband has a say in the matter that she shouldn't be going around selling her eggs and producing other people's children that are not his. Okay. Well, I'll just finish that paragraph. But it should just be noted that everything we said until now is just from a strictly monetary standpoint. So what we learned is two things. Rav Moshe Sternbach believes that monetarily a woman is able to sell her egg to another woman who needs it for surrogacy purposes, that way she can produce children. But when it comes to the question of Isser Veheter, is it ethical? He says it's not ethical for a woman to be selling her eggs to somebody else. He believes that it confuses the lineage. It confuses a lot of things when it comes to Jewish parenthood.
Okay? Not only that, I mean, so say you had a single woman doing it, you know?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you'd get around the marriage issues, but it would still be confusing. Would it be looked at differently?
So from a single woman, he still seems to think it's problematic, but not as problematic.
Right.
Right. So I guess, you know, if one were to decide to do it, better to take in, or I mean, the thing is, the marriage issue is only a problem, actually, he says. It's interesting. You know, maybe I exaggerated a little bit. This isn't exactly, you know, doesn't come as close to adultery as I made it out to be. Because it says her husband has the right to withhold her from selling the egg. But the thing is, you know, if someone's husband, you know, don't ask me how people think, but if there's someone crazy out there who's okay with his wife committing adultery, even if he is mochel and he says, I'm okay with it, that doesn't permit the act. It's still halachically prohibited. She and the adulterer will still be put to death by Beis Din. But over here, the man could say, I'm okay with you giving your egg to someone else to have a child, and that other man is going to produce a child with your egg. If he's okay with it, it's fine. That it's almost more from a monetary standpoint, that she has obligations to him, and he has partial ownership over the egg, so to speak. And therefore, he is able to withhold it from being sold to somebody else. That's more the idea there. I think that helps sharpen it a bit. Okay, but I want to distinguish between two different kinds. Well, Rav Moshe Schirmach wants to distinguish between two different kinds of things that our bodies produce. In the next paragraph, the second column on the first page, one is only considered an owner over their body for davar sheish lo chalibin, something that will grow back afterwards. So if I want to, don't ask me, you know, sell you my nails will grow back. I'm the owner over my fingernails. If I want to sell my blood, when people donate blood, they can donate blood because, God willing, our bodies produce more blood over a certain period of time. So when it comes to blood and it comes to other parts of our body that is constantly able to reproduce given proper nutrition, that we are considered the owners over. But if it comes to something like a kidney, when someone sells a kidney, it's not going to regenerate. Something like that, God did not give us the right to be the owner over.
But I believe a liver regenerates, right?
Oh, interesting. So if I take out a complete liver or like a part of a liver?
Part of a liver. So.
Right. You know what? Because I think there's like that Greek myth about someone who got punished by the gods and the birds would always eat from his liver and then it would regenerate overnight. And then every day that's what would happen. Things that I picked up over time. Yes.
To save a life?
Okay. Yes. Yeah, so to save a life. But the question is, can I charge money for it? So
no, I'm not talking about that.
To save a life. The question is, can I charge money, not just donate it? Lloyd.
You can charge money for skin graft, yes. I guess.
I think you're running into civil problems, civil law, that doesn't allow you all these freedoms that this rabbi seems to...
But we're talking about Jewish law.
Yeah, but...
I am curious. However, you live in a civil society,
and so... You don't quite have all the freedoms that maybe this rabbi promulgates.
I don't think anybody would stop you.
Lloyd, what freedoms are you thinking of?
I don't think you can sell parts of your body. I know the tech giants don't allow you to advertise for it. For instance, you can't sell a kidney, you can't sell your eggs and or sperm, if you possibly could, but it's tricky to do. I don't think you have the legal authority to do that, whether this rabbi promotes it or not. But
right.
We live in a civil society.
Absolutely. Definitely assuming that it's okay. I don't know.
Rabbi?
Yes, Drake.
Oh, there's a couple of things. Does it matter that the fact is... we have two kidneys and then we can live without just one?
So basically, that's why one would ever be allowed to donate a kidney or sell a kidney potentially, because one could live without it. Certainly, if one, you know, if I wanted to donate my heart and I'm a, you know, healthy living person who hopefully has many years ahead of me, then that's suicide to give my heart away. Mm-hmm. That, of course, ain't dochen nefesh mipnei nefesh. We don't sacrifice one life to save another life. So the question has to be for something that I can live without. So a kidney, I can donate. So the kidney is interesting. I can live without one kidney, but a kidney is something that does not regenerate. So it's possible, and this is what he talks about in this paragraph. It's possible that a kidney, I should not have ownership over it. So for those who are following inside, skip down to the underline. So on the one hand, I might not be the owner of my kidney, but can anyone think of a good way, a halakhic way to circumvent it? I want to make money off selling my kidney, but I'm not the owner of my kidney. What is another halakhic way that I can charge you money for taking my kidney? And if you want a hint, think about how rabbis are paid. I don't know if that helps.
How who's paid?
How rabbis. Halakhically, if that's a good hint.
Like a heteriska or something like that?
Oh, well, we don't know who has to cover it.
Somebody can give you a gift? I don't know.
I always accept gifts, but no. Okay, I'll tell you what I have in mind over here. It's similar. It's not completely analogous. So maybe that threw you off more. But what he says over here is that you are getting paid. I'm not selling you the kidney. So here's the analogy. I'll give you the analogy, what I have in mind. Officially, well, back in the day, rabbis didn't have to do all the pastoral things they do today. They didn't have to do all the office and ministry of stuff they do today. It used to be that if you're a rabbi, literally all you did was teach Torah and Paskin Halacha. So the thing is, according to the Rambam, I'm not allowed to make money off teaching people Torah. But then the issue is, since I'm not allowed to make money off teaching someone Torah, I don't own the Torah I teach. I can't make money off of it. How does a community ever make sure that their rabbi isn't starving to death by not having an income? So the way around it today is simply that a rabbi gets paid for looking over the weekly bulletin and sending out administrative emails. That's what we're considered getting paid for. We're not, you know, these classes that I do, these are completely pro bono. The rest of my job, I get paid for. So that's halakhically how we look at it.
How do you look at it with a mohel?
What was that?
How do you rationalize this with the mohel?
Okay. So here's the real answer. You know, let's say I didn't have any of the side ministry stuff. So all I did was teach Torah. Wouldn't that be wonderful? So if all I do is teach Torah, then what I'm getting paid for is not the teaching of the Torah, but the schar batala am teaching from 8 to 9 o'clock.
For not doing anything else.
Exactly, Susan. I could be sitting on my couch watching TV with Marissa now, or, you know, I could be playing a video game on my phone or something of the like. But instead, I come over here to learn Torah with all of you, and I have that huge schus. So that's considered, when a rabbi gets paid for that, that's considered where the money's going to, for the schar pu'ula. So in a similar way, it's not completely analogous, but you'll see what I'm saying. You're not getting paid for providing a kidney. You're getting paid for the service of enduring a surgery and undergoing the process of letting them extract a kidney from you. So I don't own that kidney, but you're paying me to undergo a surgical process to provide that kidney.
Pain and suffering, as it were.
Exactly. I think in his words, he formulates it as exactly. On the, all the way on the bottom of the second column on the last page, on the first page, mikol makom b'masha gufo sovel tsar v'yisurim ekev otsas evarav, because of the pain and suffering I have to go through to get this surgery done, ze gufa choshir kemosha gufo asa pu'ula. It's considered as if I am working, I'm actually performing an action. Not, this is more than the rabbi, I'm not just being passive, I'm not just losing time. Undergoing the surgery is considered an action, even though technically I am passive during the surgery. And that's what I get paid for. And now here is a really fascinating nafgamina. You turn to the next page, the first paragraph there. Here is such a fascinating nafgamina, a practical halakhic difference. What's the practical halakhic difference? Okay, great. I found a different way to get paid for doing the same thing. What's the difference halakhically if I get paid to sell you a kidney or if I get paid to undergo the surgery? Check out this paragraph here. Since I'm not the owner of that kidney, that kidney, the moment it leaves my body, it becomes hefker. There's no owner of it. So you know what can happen? Let's say one of the surgeons is not very scrupulous. So instead of giving that kidney to the person who was intended for, he pockets it himself and then he sells it on the black market somewhere. He runs off with it. The person who wanted the kidney from me, they would still need to pay me for that surgery because they're not paying me for the kidney. Even if the kidney somehow doesn't make it to him in the end of the day, I was paid to undergo the agony and the stress of going through a surgery. That is what I'm being compensated for. So there's two nafkinas. One, someone could grab the kidney and run for it. And technically, from a strict monetary standpoint, not an ethical standpoint, from a monetary standpoint, they are considered the owner, or not rather, they're not considered the owner of that kidney. They would be considered the owner of that kidney. They would take it from Hefker. And I, who donated the kidney, can still demand compensation because I'm being paid to undergo the surgery. I'm not being paid to provide the kidney. So even if it doesn't make it at the end of the day, there's still compensation that's required. Interesting point.
I still find the problem.
Yes.
And that is, not every surgery comes out the way it's anticipated. Mm-hmm. You are endangering your life by undergoing that type of surgery. And are you allowed to endanger your life? And also, does it make any difference who's going to get the kidney? You're donating a kidney for a close relative as opposed to a stranger who might not even be Jewish.
Right. So there's a number of layers to that question. So let's take it one by one. So the first point you made is, am I allowed to undergo it? So the halacha in the Mishnah Berurah and Hilchos Shabbos, he says that one is definitely not required to put themselves at a risk to save someone else's life. But I believe the halacha is one is allowed to risk themselves to save somebody else's life. So if there's someone drowning in the sea, he's for sure going to die. I'm a relatively good swimmer, but it's still treacherous waters. I can be a lifeguard and risk myself to save that person's life. So that's similar to what's happening here. Also, I'm not sure what the statistics are. It's possible that, I mean, someone can tell me. I never looked into this. How many people would die over the course of a kidney extraction? If it's a very low statistic, then as we learned in a previous class, if it's low enough, if it's, less than 1 out of 1,000 chance, then it might not even be categorized as pikuach nefesh. That might not even be called endangering yourself. So that we've discussed in the past. As far as it going to a Jew versus a guy, to a non-Jew. So yes, technically from a strict halachic standpoint, we'd probably value it going to a Jew more. But the argument that's made is that if we expect non-Jews to be donating to us and getting blood transfusions from them, then how can we just say, but we're not going to reciprocate. We're not going to give our kidneys, our blood to you as well. So even not from an ethical standpoint, there's an ethical argument, which I just said, but there's also a pragmatic. There's a, what's the right word for it? Utilitarian, that's the right one. There's a utilitarian purpose for it, that you scratch my back, I scratch yours kind of idea. It's a quid pro quo, but not in the political sense.
Wasn't that the reason for a while Israel wasn't allowed to participate in the organ donation Bank of Europe because they didn't want to give organs. And then there was realization that they had to do it more openly if they wanted to be able to get back.
Okay, good. Dina, I'm glad you brought that in. And I think that's a bit of the history between behind the Halakhic Organ Donor Society.
Yes.
Where they tried, are you part of that, Dina, or are you just bringing it up?
Well, I donated a kidney to my husband, so I'm pretty aware of all this. But
yeah. Okay. So you're you know, this is Halakhalamaisa here.
Okay. Yeah.
Definitely. So just from the Halakhic Organ Donor Society, this is like a whole separate thing. My Rebbe, Rav Tendler, is like one of the main Rabbanim who supports Halakhic Organ Donor Society, which basically says, and this is a shiur unto itself also, when someone dies, they can take the organs, they can take the heart and give it to somebody. So their whole thing is that they define death as the death of the brain stem. I forgot what it's called, like something like psychic decapitation, something like that. I got the wrong word, but something like that. Physiologic decapitation, maybe it was. So, but not based off the heart dying. So there's a whole machlokes over. Schechter wrote an article about it. Rabbi Bleich weighs in on it. It's a huge controversy. The one thing you just need to be careful about, just from an educator standpoint, is that if you ever hear anyone know what's the difference between an educational platform versus an advocacy platform? Anyone know the difference? The difference between education and advocacy is that when I educate, like I try to do sometimes in classes, I try to admit my biases when I can. I have a topic and I try to provide different sides, different rationales to really explore all viable opinions within a particular question. Advocacy is, I already came to a conclusion, I already have my beliefs, and now I'm propounding it and trying to inculcate it into all my listeners. So like a place like Halakhic Organ Donor Society, they have their shita, they have their principles, and they're, you know, admittedly, much of it is very compelling, the arguments that they make. But one has to know that when you listen to them, their goal, I heard from the head, the goal is to get you to believe what their conclusion. Their goal is not to give you an equal presentation of all the sides in there. So, but anyway, that's our longer discussion at another point. One other thing that I wanted to bring in here to keep in mind, and then we'll wrap up. We're not going to see so much inside at this point. I'll try to do a little more outside so we can end soon. There's an idea that based in, so whenever a rabbi is on a court today, we lost the tradition for smicha. We lost the tradition of being called Rebbe this, Rebbe that. There used to be a line of rabbis from Moses or Moshe Rabbeinu, but then after destruction of the temple, sometime later, we lost the link in the chain. We lost after the times of Mishnayos or during, we lost the tradition of smicha. So for instance, when I have a certificate that says Moshe Meir Kurtz is a musmach of Yeshiva University, what that means is that I passed a few tests at YU and I did a rabbinic internship and took some public speaking classes, but that's really what it says. It doesn't make me a rabbi the same way there were rabbis back in the days of yore. And so the thing is, if there's no real rabbis today, which again is another topic we explore another time, we talked about during our Woman Rabbis class, if there's no real bona fide rabbis today, then how could any Beis Din ever adjudicate halachic issues, halachic cases, if none of them are qualified to be on a Beis Din by virtue of not having smicha? So the answer is that the rabbis back then made the rabbis of today their shliachs, their agents. So when a rabbi's on a basin today, they're considered as acting in the shoes of, they're a shliach, they're an agent of the rabbis from back then. That's how it operates. So the thing is, the rabbis from the days of yore who had real smicha, genuine smicha, they said, we're going to give you the rights to rule in our stead, but we're not going to give you the rights to rule on all matters. So for instance, one of the things that you can't rule on is you're only allowed to rule on commonplace cases. Penalty cases, those who are learning Thursday night's Makos with us, you'll know that a Beis Din there rules on knassos, on penalty payments. Perhaps Adam Zomerman is one of those examples. But nowadays, you can't have Adam Zomen. Nowadays, there's no penalties. We don't do penalty payments nowadays. So the question is this considered, is the concept, let's say, in our case, I donated a kidney. And then that surgeon, that unscrupulous surgeon, he runs away with the kidney. And now I demand compensation for undergoing that surgery. Can I bring that case to a modern day based in? Because on the one hand, so basically what he says, on the one hand, the obligation stems from schiras poelim. I am just working for you. I have most people get paid to pick berries in the field, to work at a computer all day as assistants, but I got paid to work for you. I got contracted to work as getting a surgery to provide a kidney for you. So on the one hand, the monetary obligation stems from something that's very commonplace. The chiyuv emanates from something that's commonplace, which is called schiras poelim, getting paid, compensated as a worker. But on the other hand, the case is a very uncommon case. That's a weird case. Come on. That's a weird case. The surgeon steals the kidney and it doesn't go to the person who you were meant to sell it to. That's a really weird case. That doesn't happen too often. This is a weird case. So maybe Basin doesn't handle cases like that nowadays. So the question is, A, can I sell the kidney? The answer is if you do it as a worker. But B, the question is, if I get into a dispute over getting compensated, is it enforceable in a Jewish court of law? That, Ramosha Sternbach raises some doubts. But so what we, just to summarize, so what we dealt with here was we talked about does a person own their body? And does a person own their body in the sense that they could sell parts of their body to somebody else? So we said for blood, for things like that, yes, for sure, because that's something that regenerates. Eggs, we said yes, probably. But maybe for a married woman, her husband could hold her back from doing it because he has rights to it. And then number three, we talked about something like a kidney, which I won't die if I donate or if I sell a kidney. If I sell a kidney, but maybe it's not enforceable. So he'll owe me the money, but maybe it's not enforceable if I get into a dispute in a Jewish court of law. So I think what we should think about from here, what we should take away is that on the one hand, we are considered somewhat owners of our body, but on the other hand, we're not. Our bodies are given to us by God as a long-term loan in this world, and God entrusts us to do what is right with them. And but ultimately, we are not considered the owners. Even, you know, if I'm not the owner over my own body, certainly I own nothing else. Everything is in God's world, Hashem Aretz Melah, everything is considered owned by God. And it's only by his graces that we are able to utilize that which he grants us in this world.
We're renting our bodies from God.
Renting. We don't give anything. It's like borrowing. You know, we try to pay him back. We try to bring carbonos. We try to pray, but he doesn't need any of it. So we're really like a showel.
No,
he's just out of his benevolence. He grants it to us.
Yep. Yeah.
Moshe.
Yes.
It causes me to think about another topic. I don't expect you to address it tonight. That would be a whole other subject. But we learned that somebody was a slave and decides that he loves his master so much that he doesn't want to leave at the end of the slavery period. He can volunteer to make himself a slave to that owner for the rest of his life, yet with the all through the air into the door. And that would be a, you know, if he doesn't own his body, how can he give himself away as a slave?
Well, I think Zadie, I think your point is actually, that's a great proof for what we're saying, because, and that's why he gets punished. He gets punished by having to have his ear pierced on the door post over there, Dafka, because his body, he should really only be serving God. And he shouldn't be subservient to a human being. So so there is this halakhic mechanism that I can work for someone as a servant, but that's definitely not what God desires from us. So on the one hand, it's permissible to be out of need, but certainly that's not the direction Hashem wants us to go into. Hashem would rather an Eved Ivri, that Jewish servant, go free once his term is up. Okay, but definitely, as you said,
Rabbi, can I ask a question?
Christina.
One more question?
Absolutely.
If we consider that we are a shoel of our bodies to God, from God, doesn't that mean that we have also an obligation to maintain that body?
Yeah.
And I would have thought that would have been one of the arguments that would be used against the Haredi community in Israel that didn't want to follow the COVID regulations.
Absolutely, Dina. Oh, and I still need to get that. You referenced the tshuva from Rav Moshe Sternbach about that the other time.
Yeah, yeah.
I still need to get that tshuva wherever you found it, if you track it down.
Yeah, but this concept of being a shoel, that should be a real obligation to do everything you can.
Absolutely.
And a community and individually. Okay. I didn't hear that argument being used.
All I can say is I see what you see, and I am as dumbfounded and have no explanation for it.
Okay.
but I would agree that the argument that you are positing, based on what we just said, certainly would be applicable, and that's why at Agudat Shalom we are very strict and make sure that everyone wears masks and social distance indoors, because we've internalized this idea to the nth degree.
We have a mitzvah shmurmaud al nafshecha.
Yeah. So yeah, we have a mitzvah to guard our lives. Absolutely. Explicit in the Torah. There we go. All right. Yasher koach. Excellent.
Thank you very much.
Everyone.
Thank you.
All right. Have a wonderful night. I'm looking forward to learning together next week as well. Have a great week, everyone.
Yes.
Thank you. Good night.
Thank you.